Good morning. I'm very thankful for the lighthouse that we just sang about. And I'm wholly reliant on the Lord this morning. The seriousness and the responsibility of what standing up here means does not escape me. I feel very vulnerable, and I need the Lord's help, because it's a fearful thing, not in the thing of the way of being afraid to do it, but it's a fearful thing to, if things are coming from me in this position at this point, or from the Lord, and I don't want to get in the way of it, and I want to be empty. That's what I was praying this morning, that the Lord would completely empty Jared and let me be an empty vessel, that just be a conduit for his words to come out. So I pray for that this morning. Also, I just ask you to please keep me in your prayers. I've written on the board the title today, A Mighty and Just God. I guess I want to preface a little bit. Yesterday, the part about the mighty, originally my title was just A Just God, but yesterday I was out working in the yard some, and I was taking a little break, so I laid down underneath one of our shade trees, and my dog came over, and of course she wants to be as close as possible to me as she can, and so she was laying there with me, and I was just laying there looking up at the tree, and for some reason it just suddenly hit me of how amazing, just because if you go outside and you look, the trees look like they're just there, and there's really not much going on. It looks like they just are, and they're inanimate. But the more I was laying there, I was looking at all the leaves, and I could see the sun shining through the leaves, and I realized as I was laying there, I was like, you know what, think about all the things I learned in biology and science class and everything, that there was things happening while I was laying there. There was action happening inside the tree that we can't see. All those leaves were absorbing energy. They're out there taking energy, light from the sun. And inside that tree, it's not really veins or anything, but there's channels for sap to be flowing to the leaves and back down to the roots, and from the roots up to the leaves, and all that is happening. While I was laying there, I was thinking, I'm laying here at the base of this tree. It's providing me shade. I don't have to do anything for the tree. It's a big, mighty oak tree. I don't have to do anything to it. Now, I know sometimes we can try to take care of one if it starts getting diseases and sick, but for the most part, they're going to do what they're going to do. God put that in motion, and I was laying there thinking of all the things that are happening in that tree, and what that tree does for me. At the moment, it was providing shade from the very sun that was providing it life. I was cooling off, and then I was laying there, and I was thinking, my dog is a very affectionate dog, and it loves me very much. It follows me around all over the place, and if I sit down, she's not satisfied to just be near me. She wants to be in my lap with her chin on my shoulder or up against my face. Or she's a very affectionate dog, and me and her have had a bond because of, well, when I got the dog, I was going through a really tough time, and Andrea got me a sign a while back that says, "When I needed a hand, I found your paw." And that's in my little office. And I was laying there thinking of that. I got my dog laying here beside me. And I've seen a saying before, and it's challenged me. It says, be the person your dog thinks you are. And so I was laying here thinking of that. Like, Lord, I got an animal here that doesn't, most cases you could say it's just a dumb animal. And they are. They don't have the capabilities of us as humans. But she knows how to provide affection, and you may laugh and think I'm foolish, but when I was going through a tough time, she knew how to just sit there and lean against me when I was sitting in the yard crying or trying to deal with things I didn't know how to deal with. It was when my dad was sick, and there's something I believe now that's part of the reason why I think she shares such a strong bond, because I sat there and I could talk to her. I know some of y'all may think I'm foolish, but I could talk to her, and she would sit there with those eyes just looking at me. It didn't matter what I said to her. It doesn't matter. It didn't matter anything. She just leaned there against me and was there. And I'm not saying I didn't have people that was there, but it was something that I needed. And God put that in that animal. He made an animal to be able to provide that. And I know some people may not be animal lovers and not experience that, but I did. I was watching our chickens and how it's kind of humorous sometimes. They just seem to wander aimlessly about, and they have all the time in the world. All they have to do all day long is just eat. And so they have all day long to make sure they eat, and then they go to bed, and they get up the next morning and do the same thing. And we have a rooster, and he goes about looking proud and very pleased with himself all the time. But he has a purpose, too. He's watching out. You can hear him every once in a while making a sound, and he's looking for things. While the hens are out eating, he's got his head up a lot of times looking around. He's paying attention, and God put that in all those animals. We have goats, and the way they interact. And the other day, I was doing something in the yard. I actually have a sling, like a shepherd's sling, and I was fooling around with it, trying to get better at it. And some rocks, when you throw them, they give a real good buzz when they fly through the air because they're spinning really fast. So I was zinging some into the woods, and as they would go way over the goats, it would spook them, and they would kind of run. And what I noticed, and I've seen this multiple times, when they get scared, they would go run and get in a tight group, and they would move as a group then. I didn't teach them how to do that, and they're not wild goats, but they still have that instinct that God put in them that, let's get together and their safety together in groups. So that's where I guess the thought was coming to me about a mighty God, that he put all those things into order. He put all those things into the animals, into the trees, and he's the one who loves me. He's the one that I can talk to. And the part about the just God that I wanted to talk about today is maybe a little telling on myself a little bit here, but one of the books that I guess for most of my life I overlooked, and maybe some of y'all are better scholars than I am, but Habakkuk has never been a book in the Bible that I just, in fact, I don't know if I've ever read it completely through before this week. But the Lord put it on my heart to read Habakkuk, and we're not going to read through the whole book, but I encourage y'all to go study Habakkuk as well and look into the history of what time frame it was and what Habakkuk was dealing with. But we don't know much at all about Habakkuk. In fact, from what I could do in my research, Habakkuk is named only twice in the Bible, and it's in his book. We don't know who he was. We don't know anything else about him, really, except for when you read the book, he was obviously a very good writer. When you read through this, it seems like this book belongs in Psalms instead of its own book. It has a feel, kind of like a bunch of David's Psalms. But a little bit of background, Habakkuk was, from what most people think and understand, he was a contemporary with Jeremiah. It would have been before the Babylonian captivity. And I want to kind of paraphrase the first chapter of Habakkuk. So Habakkuk was, this is when Judah had turned far, far away from God. And there was child sacrifice happening, horrible immorality happening in the temple. The priests were bringing horrible immorality into the temple, like pagan type worship, very sensual. And it was wicked, wickedness in the sight of God. And so Habakkuk went to God and said, "How long, O Lord? How long are we going to deal with this? Do you not see? Do you not see all this wickedness that's happening? Do you not see the iniquity that's happening in your country, in your people?" And the Lord answered him with a prophecy, and he prophesied about the destruction and the Chaldeans rising up and overthrowing the Israelite nation or the Judah. And so he God told him, he's like, look, I'm going to raise up the Chaldeans. They're a wicked and strong. They're a strong people, but they're going to come in and they're going to wreak havoc in your land. And Habakkuk, once again, said, well, Lord, the Chaldeans, you're going to use those people? You're going to allow those people to profit? You're going to allow that wicked country, the Chaldeans, to come in and take that? I thought you hated iniquity. I thought you hated evil. How, as a just God, are you going to allow someone like the Chaldeans to come in and benefit from your land? So this is where I want to pick up in chapter 2. Maybe I'll pause here for a second. When I read that, what Habakkuk was talking about in the first chapter, I feel like I've had some of those same attitudes about the world today. You can look around, and yes, do we see some positive changes, I guess you would say, in our nation here and there? But without true heart change, there's not real change happening. Policies and executive orders and things like that, it's nice, but it's not going to stick unless there's a turning away, a true heart change of the people. But we can sit here and say, Lord, do you not see the iniquity? Do you not see the evil that's around us? And we can think too sometimes that, Lord, why are you allowing your people to suffer because of all this wickedness? We can see the changes happening in the world. And if God spares time, things are going to change in our nation too, where it's not going to be popular. It's already not popular, but it's going to get to the point at some point, I believe, that we're going to maybe become under duress to worship the Lord the way we feel we need to worship the Lord, because it's the culture of the world is heading that direction. Our serving Jesus the way the Bible commands us to serve him, and the commandments that are in the Bible are directly against what the world is tending towards. Everything in here is against that. And I know I'm not trying to sound doom and gloom, and hopefully by the end of this we can see the return back to the mighty part of God. But we got to understand that we serve a just God. And it can look like right now that evil is winning, evil is got the upper hand, but we serve a just God. And I'm going to read a little bit in Habakkuk, the second chapter. He says, I will stand, this is Habakkuk, I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I am reproved. So he had just finished his discourse with the Lord, saying, Lord, do you not see the iniquity? The Lord went on and said, okay, this is what's going to happen. The Chaldeans are going to come. I'm going to raise them up. And then Habakkuk had just finished the chapter right before that. He had just finished saying, Lord, I don't understand. How are you going to use the Chaldeans? But this is the part that I want us to get a hold of, the attitude that Habakkuk had. And as you read through, you can see his attitude isn't one of defiance to the Lord. I feel like Habakkuk was honestly coming to the Lord. It's like, Lord, I don't understand. But he said, but I will stand upon my watch. I'm going to set me up on a tower, and I will watch to see what he will say to me. So, Lord, I don't understand what you're doing. I don't understand how you're going to bring the Chaldeans in here and why you're going to allow them to profit from your people. But he said, but I'm going to stand right here. I'm going to go to a place where I can see, and I'm going to watch, and I'm going to wait to see what you say to me. And then right after that, he said, and the Lord answered me. And he said, write the vision and make it plain upon tables, that he may run that readeth it. So then the Lord starts giving him some clarification. He says, you know, the Chaldeans are coming, but in the long run, they're not going to win. Because he said, in my Bible, the heading over verse 6 says, woe to the Chaldeans. And it goes through a whole list of things of what the Chaldeans were known for. Some of the things I'm not going to read in here, but it's talking about the wickedness that the Chaldeans, what defined them, and God saying, woe to those people. They're not going to, yes, they're going, it's going to come, and it's going to be ugly, and it's not going to be fun for you, but they're not going to, in the long run, they're not going to benefit either. And he prophesied the fall of the Babylonian Empire in this. He prophesied how the Chaldeans are going to come, and they're going to take, and they're going to steal, and they're going to plunder, but they're debtors. That's only going to be, that's a debt that they're going to owe. And it says in here, I don't remember what verse it is, but that their debtors are going to rise up, and they're going to require that back of them. And it was true. The Babylonian Empire did crumble, and Habakkuk prophesied that in his book. But one thing I wanted to, a warning, I feel like he was talking about the Chaldeans, but there's a warning in here. So it's verse 18, chapter 2, verse 18. What profiteth the graven image that the maker thereof hath graven it, the molten image, and a teacher of lies that the maker of his work trusteth therein to make dumb idols? Woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone, arise, and it shall teach. Behold, it is laid over with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in the midst of it. I'll stop there. This was a challenge to me. I know I've mentioned previously that some of the things that I've struggled with in my past of allowing things to take the place of the Lord, we don't have actual graven images of stone and wood. And I'll have to say, even as recently, I can get discouraged at what we see around us. Overcome by stress, things that we're dealing with in life, and then watching how things are unfolding in the world, and it just seems like there's really not, for lack of better words, it can seem like God's losing control of things, and we want to get our hands in it. Kind of like what Habakkuk was trying to kind of say in the last part of the first chapter. It's like, Lord, I know you're needing to, I understand that Judah is wicked, but the Chaldeans, are you sure there's not another way? We can sometimes think that way of, Lord, I know you got to do something, but I don't know if you need to do it that way. Well, how often do we, instead of going and standing up on our watch, setting up a tower and waiting for the Lord to speak to me, do I instead get stressed out and turn to my graven idol, graven image, and say, arise, whatever, and speak to me? Arise, whatever it is that is that we tend to place before spending time with the Lord. I will say, I didn't bring mine up here, and I've mentioned this before, and I don't want to sound like I'm beating the same drum over and over, but the cell phones that we have today have become that to so many people. And I will say, except being vulnerable to you, that had become that to me, and I still have to daily, weekly, monthly, whatever you want, hour by hour, fight that. Because there is so much, I am an information, I like information, I like to learn things, I like to understand things, I usually don't take anything for what it is without investigating. Why does that work? I want to understand. I was thinking the other day about automatic transmission, and I got to thinking, I'm not just satisfied with, hey, it just shifts gears and it goes. I want to understand why it does that. How does it do that? And that's not wrong. It's not wrong to want to understand things. But when I have a resource, like it's sitting over on my bench, when I have a resource like something like that, it is so easy for me, the personality that I have, to use that to, and I can, if I'm not careful, I'll get up in the morning to go to work, and I will use all of my time between the time I get up and my quiet time I have in my chair. And before I realize it, I've got to get on the road or I'm going to be late to work. And I haven't ever cracked open the Bible. And I'm going to tell you that. And then I feel, Lord, I'm sorry. I don't want to be that way. But was I not saying in that moment, woe unto, awake to the dumb stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is laid over with gold and silver. And there's, I go to that thing and say, arise, teach me. I end up spending time with it instead of the one, instead of going to say, Lord, I'll stand on my watch and see what you'll say to me. I'm going to wait to see what you have for me to say. But instead, I go try to wake up my idol. And most of the time, I'd venture to say most of us in here, if we do that, and I'm speaking for myself, I don't think of it as an idol. If I did, when I think of it that way, I'm just appalled by it. But then when I really start narrowing it down to what that thing has become, that's exactly what this is. No, I don't have a stone or a wood idol, but I have something that if I'm not careful, I will turn to it when I'm stressed, when I'm tired, when I need to unwind, and go to that graven image and say, arise, feed me, awake, give me what I need. Instead of coming to this and say, Lord, here I am. I will stand on my tower and wait to see what you have to say. So then the very next verse really hit home to me. It says, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. And at first I glossed over that, but then I started thinking about it and I studied about what that meant. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. It's not that we aren't supposed to talk to God. That's not what it's saying. It's saying exactly what I was just talking about. Wait silently on the Lord. Get rid of all those distractions and things that buzz and get in my head. He wants us to be quiet, to sit down. It's okay to sit and be quiet and say, Lord, here I am. But how often do I sit and be quiet and say, all right, Lord, here I am. Okay, well, what? Okay, wait, what's the weather tomorrow? Oh, wow, they bombed Ukraine again. What's going on? Is that not real life? Is that not, or you sit down and your phone buzzes and like, well, who was that? Can we not just put that to the side? And I'm talking to myself because I still struggle with this. Can I not just put that to the side and ignore whatever it was? I doubt for 15 minutes it's going to hurt for me to put that, maybe even another room if I have to, and have some quiet time with the Lord. He said, let all the earth keep silence before him. Let him come to me and be quiet and hear what the Lord has to say. Allow him to fill your heart. The Lord has been challenging me with that. Is it wrong for me to learn things? No, it's not. But don't let it become my idol where I spend my spare time that I have that I could be spending with the Lord. Because the Lord has had to challenge me multiple times when I pray. I say, Lord, why am I not closer to you? Why am I not feeling hearing your voice right now? And he'll very plainly let me know, well, when did I have a chance? When were you listening? When were you just being quiet? When were you studying? Because, y'all, I'll have to say, too, it's sometimes I'll realize it's been a little while since I sat down and just tried to study. Because I'll admit, maybe I'm the only one, but sometimes in the morning I get up and I try to read, and I'm like, ooh, and my eyes kind of getting blurry, and you read the these and thous, and he did this and that, and it can get a little, maybe I'm the only one, but I don't think I am. It can get just glazed over, and then you get done, and you just say, well, I have no clue what I just read. I don't even know what it means. It was like, well, it's time to leave, and I got nothing. Well, time to start my day. I'll pray to the Lord when I get on the road and hope for the best. That's real life, too. But he still wants us to be silent, to listen. Say, Lord, I didn't hear what you had for me this morning, but Lord, I want to understand. Can you please? And it's the attitude of our heart to be silent before him. It doesn't mean that we always have to be just sitting in a recliner. I can be silent before the Lord while I'm working on my car, or while I'm sitting at my computer working at work, or I've had the Lord drop things in my mind while I'm busy. But I can still be, while I'm busy, I can still be silent before the Lord. I hope that's making sense. I don't have to have all these things buzzing and trying to, as soon as I get a spare moment, that I gotta go look this up or catch up on the latest post or the latest video that got published or whatever. So Lord, help us. Then chapter 3 of Habakkuk is one of the parts in here that's very similar to a song. In fact, I think the last phrase in this chapter talks about, it's for the chief musician. It was meant to be sung, and in services, I believe, and actually I think there's instruction in here to a chief singer on stringed instruments. So it even says how to use it, to have stringed instruments play it. But when you read through this last prayer of Habakkuk, he's walking through all the things that God has done for his people. He's remembering things. He's remembering, I think he references Gideon and others. He references different things in the past of Judah and Israel. And he understands. He said, Lord, I think the very first verse says something about, I understand these things are happening, but Lord, don't forget mercy. Have mercy on your people. The ones that are still true to you, have mercy on them. Lord, I know that this is going to happen. I know that Judah is wicked. But then at the very last, and this is probably where some of the more famous verses in Habakkuk are at, is in starting at chapter in verse 17. Habakkuk rejoices in the Lord is the title in my Bible that says, although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. Yet will I rejoice, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. And I'll stop there for a second. Habakkuk, like I said, he'd been having a conversation with the Lord, and he understood what was happening. He had had this quiet moment, and the Lord had spoke to him. And then he went back to the Lord and was just talking. He said, Lord, this is all the things that I know. I know you've done. I know you've been with us, and you've helped us. And I know that things are fixing to get rough by what you've told me. And this is another attitude of Habakkuk that I want to be able to say in my life, is although the fig tree shall not blossom, although everything is going to fall apart, maybe my transmission will go out, my air conditioner, have terrible sickness in my family, maybe lose a loved one, all these things are going to happen. Maybe they all happen at the same time, and in this case they did. Though no herd be in the stall, all the things that I have be destroyed, and does it look like I have any hope? Yet, Lord, I will rejoice in you. I will joy in the God of my salvation. It doesn't matter if there's no figs on the fig tree. And think figuratively here now. It doesn't matter if, I think I mentioned it the other Wednesday night, God forbid that all of you leave, and I'm the only one left. I will joy in the God of my salvation. That we have that attitude that doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter what happens around me, that I'm going to joy in the God of my salvation. I will rejoice if there's no herd in the stall, if everything that I have gets taken from me. Is that not the attitude that the Lord wants us to have? Is, Lord, here it is. It's all yours. If you take it, that's okay. If you let me have it, that's okay. And we can look at, if we're not careful, and see the wickedness in the world and see them prospering and think, Lord, I think it's multiple times in the scripture. I think David said it a few times in the Psalms of why are the wicked the ones that are prospering? And the long story short, when you read Habakkuk, is God says they're not going to in the long run. Yes, it seems that way right now, but long run, it's not going to be good for the wicked. It may look like they're prospering now, but I've got you in my hand. And we'll come back to Habakkuk in a second. I want to read in Malachi. This is the part about the just God. We can look at God as being mighty, and if we're not careful, we can look at him as being harsh, but he's not. He's just. He's going to give what's due. And I felt like this, the Book of Remembrance, a passage in Malachi, I think it's, was it Malachi 3? Yeah, Malachi 3 and 16. This is the hope that we have. Is Well, I'm just going to read it. Malachi 3, verse 16. Then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it. And a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord, and that thought upon his name. And they shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them, as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. Then shall I return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not. Then we'll go on through to chapter 4. For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. Now I know chapter 4 is mostly talking about the coming of the Messiah, but I believe it also is speaking of and can be applied to judgment. The time when Jesus comes back the second time, he's going to come back and there's going to be a book of remembrance. He's writing everything down. And this is what God was trying to explain to Habakkuk too, is yes, the Chaldeans are wicked. They are wicked. You're right. But I think it is in chapter 2 where God tells him they're wicked. They're going to come and they're going to take over, but it's not going to last for them. And I'm keeping a book. I'm keeping track of where everyone is. There's a book of remembrance, and I believe the book of remembrance is written for those that fear him, but it's also by default keeping track of the ones who aren't remembering the Lord, who aren't following the Lord, because when we get to the end of the time and we're before the judgment, our name is either going to be in there or it's not. If it's not in the book of remembrance, we're going to get cast away. And Lord, help me that I want to be like Habakkuk and say, Lord, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to listen. I understand. I'm going to, no matter what happens, no matter if it looks like the wicked are winning, and I'm just going to tell you, I don't believe that we may have some temporary reprieves here and there, but the trend of the world is not getting better. It's not getting to the point where, you know, where it's getting more and more accepted to serve the Lord. That's not the trend that we see right now. If everything is taken away from me, I'm going to trust the Lord. I will joy in my God and the God of my salvation. And I'm so thankful that these scriptures are in here to talk about the Lord saying, I remember you. Just trust me. I'm writing it down. It's all going to come out in the end. You may go through a lot during this life. And I've known people. We all know people who've dealt with horrible, hard things as a child of God. But have you not seen the peace that comes with it? Have you seen the people in the world who go through hard things and what happens to their lives? I've seen that, and it's not pretty. You see stuff in the news sometimes of people dealing with things, and they just, the way they handle themselves is so sad. It's sad the things that they try to do to fix their problems. But also I want to go back to Habakkuk, the last verse. This is, I think, probably the most well-known verse in Habakkuk. The Lord God is my strength, and he will make my feet like hinds feet, and he will make me to walk upon mine high places. I found that to be true when I allow the Lord to work in my life. When I start trying to turn back to my things, arise, you stone idol, speak to me, I start losing my hinds feet, start stumbling down and getting down through the lower places and not able to be up on top of the mountain. And I understand that we're not going to feel like we're on top of the mountain all the time. We have emotions. We're humans. But the Lord is my strength, and I will walk on high places. I'll have feet like a deer. I'll be able to walk on the high places. I'll get to walk on the places that I normally wouldn't be able to walk if it wasn't for the Lord. And that's what I found, that in times when my natural personality, I've had some things happen, and my natural personality would have lashed out or would have handled things in a poor way. And I realized, like, Lord, thank you. You, without realizing it, you gave me hinds feet to walk on higher places to handle that differently. Different than what I naturally would have been. And we sang some songs. I think one of them I take much courage in this is the one about the happy people, I believe. And I'll just share one last thought before I sit down. I think it said in there about that we're sealed with his love or something. It's in the chorus of the that song, Happy People. But there's a verse, and I think it's mentioned several times in the scriptures about God sealing us. And I think it's in 2 Timothy. Let me find it. In fact, I think it was one of the verses today. 2 Timothy 2 and 19, I believe. Yes, this goes right along with the verses in Malachi, just to give some encouragement that not trying to be doom and gloom, that the world is awful and wicked is winning, because it's not. It may appear that way, but we have a just and mighty God. This scripture says, "Nevertheless, the foundation of God standeth sure, having this seal, the Lord knoweth them that are his." He knows the ones that are dedicated, that are coming to him. And then it finishes off, says, "Let everyone that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity." But I was focusing on that verse and having this seal. In my job, I'm a licensed engineer in a few states, and one of the things in my job is I am required by law to seal, I have stamp documents that I've done or that I've been over and stamp them with my profession, my official seal to say I authorize this document as being true and accurate. To the best of my knowledge, this has been done and this is true, this is validated. You can hang your hat on it. In other words, it's real, and this is the real final document. And I've now sealed it, and legally, no one can change that document. No one can change if someone changes the plans and without my knowledge, then that's illegal. And anyway, there's a lot of stuff behind that. Once the document is sealed, it can't be changed. It can't be updated. It's validated. And so I looked at this. It says, "The foundation of God standeth sure, having this seal," or this validation. This you can be assured of that this is real. You can be absolutely confident in. God has put his seal on me. God knows them that are his. I almost look at it too as like a having cattle and stuff. Almost like a brand. Not that he actually brand us, but say, "This one's mine. I've put my seal on this one. I know this one is mine." Now, can we decide to walk away? We can. That's why the last part of the verse says, "Let everyone that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity." But Lord, help me that I would take courage, that whenever it looks like wicked is winning, that I can remember this, that the Lord knows those that are his. He's keeping a book. He has a book of remembrance that's documenting all the things that are going on. Nothing is getting past him. He's a mighty and a just God, and that means that he is a perfect judge, and justice will be served. Not that I want anyone to suffer, but I can be assured that if I stay focused on him, he's going to remember me. He's going to know me. When I get to my time that I stand before him, he's going to know who I am. He's going to remember me and say, "Yep, you're in my book. I've been writing about you. Maybe I didn't do everything perfect, and I know I'm not doing everything perfect. But if we keep our heart, say, Lord, no matter what happens, I'm going to rejoice in you. I'm going to go stand on my tower. I'm going to wait. I'm going to listen. And I'm not going to turn to my idols. I'm not going to turn to these things and get overwhelmed by the fact that the Chaldeans are coming in and stealing and plundering, and I have no figs on my tree. I'm going to rejoice in you." Y'all pray for me. I want to be true to the Lord.